It's Thursday, the 23rd of February, and you're listening to the Red Army Roundup. I'm your host, Paul Hinton, and as ever, I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello there, gents.
Hello, Paul.
Good evening, Paul.
And we're going to look back on a, quite frankly, epic Belfast weekend and Nottingham away. I think we've left it till Thursday to allow us all to fully recover from the carnage that was Belfast. We have a bit of a discussion around our newest player, how he's got in, and the team rotation that we've been doing and how we think it should be used going forward. A bit of a look at the league that none of us really want to look at, but we'll do it before previewing this weekend's games against Coventry and Edinburgh. So, kicking off, we'll go all the way back to Friday. Hard to believe it was nearly a week ago now. Who says that we're not bang up to date? And the first two periods in Belfast is, I was not a happy bunny. I think Sean wasn't happy, Aaron wasn't happy. It was quite a flat, you wouldn't think from looking at the shots, but just a very flat performance from the Devils for 40 minutes, Sean.
Yeah, and it seemed like we created a couple of opportunities, but it just felt like we were under the cosh a bit, and Belfast looked to have the advantage and be first to all the loose pucks and win the battles on the boards. And they tended to, I think they had the better high percentage scoring opportunities, to be quite honest with you. And I was quite concerned that it was going to, after 40 minutes, that we were pretty much dead and buried, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, 3-0 down in Belfast after 40 minutes. You're never looking at that thinking, Here we go, this is going to be good.
Yeah, two goals from their new signing, Jerome Leduc as well, with a great drive to the net for their first goal. Pulls a great move on Ben Bounds, and then Forney gets one from the point, and Leduc actually has a power play goal, which is an absolute bullet from between the two circles in the slot.
Yeah, good goals, and yeah, that one from Forney in the last minute of the first, just I think it was probably a fair reflection of the first period that Belfast had that second goal, but it was a proper killer for momentum for the Devils. And yeah, two periods in, countless beers in, and just thinking, let's get these 40 minutes done and 20 minutes done and get back to Rockies. And I think probably the same for you, Aaron, but Mark Richardson's opening goal after some great work, I sort of cheered it as a goal, but not in any great expectation.
Well, I was stood on the bridge after, because I had a tantrum during the second period intermission. We scored that first goal. It looked pretty from where I was standing, but I was just like, meh, it's still a long way to go, you know. But then Sean Bentivoglio slotted another one home. It looked unlikely that we was going to do anything after that, and this goal, all bodily fluids left my body, and Joey Haddad scored, slotted it straight down the middle of the net, right in front of me. Oh my God, it was absolutely phenomenal, and it was probably one of the best experience, but one of the best goals I've ever witnessed. I seen the play build, got the puck right in front of the net, put it over Murphy, dead in the middle of the net, and I lost everything. Running around the bridge in front of Belfast fans, screaming in their face.
Bet you were really, really popular in that Belfast area.
where I settled down and I looked around and I was like, Christ, a lot of Belfast fans here. And I was like, oh no.
Oh no.
Oh no. And then my buddy Paddy slotted another one home, and, you know, there was me standing there all smug. And it was just absolutely fantastic. How we can turn a 3-0 game into a 4-3 within 20 minutes is just absolutely ridiculous, and literally one of the best games of hockey, well, one of the best 10 minutes of hockey I've seen this year, and it was just absolutely phenomenal.
I think you do have to factor in and say that it was probably one of the best games you've seen, because without the dire performance of the two periods, then you don't get the comeback, and the comeback was insane. We had a little bit of puck luck. You mentioned Sean Bentivoglio's goal, and it was just, he tried to get it into the slot, and I think it went off someone's skate. So we had that bit of luck on that case. But then the tie-in goal is just a great move from Patrick Astling behind the net, as you said. And Joey Haddad, I think Joey Haddad was only slightly more excited than you, Aaron, because he was going absolutely wild. I think he did a bit of a pirouette as well.
it was beautiful. He just put his hat in the ring, the figure skating.
They show it on the slow-mo on the highlights, and he looks like quite the figure skater, I will say. He looks very, very eloquent. And I think at that stage, Paul, I was about to say, you and I looked at each other and we just wanted to hold on and get the point, I think.
Yeah, I wanted to hold on for the point, but once the game, because from there you think, God, we've got a point from absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Let's just let that slip. But as soon as the puck dropped and the game got underway again, just thought there's only one winner in this, whether it's in overtime or in regulation. Yeah. Very quickly it was we've got a point. This is we're going to go on and win this. And like Aaron said, Patrick Astling, great week all round for Astling, but you've sealed the win in just an amazing way.
Yeah, the move from Fournier as well. I think the puck was ringing around the boards. Fournier sort of steps into it, fakes a shot, and the defenseman is just stood still trying to go out to him. He dangles around him and fires a pass. Literally, Patrick Astling just cannot miss, and we've seen him score so many little clinical goals like that through the year that it was going in every single time.
And in Aaron's mentioning of losing his mind, I think that is the main reason why both of us now have black and blue legs. me, you and a friend ended up horizontal on the row in front.
That was for the equalising goal, I think.
It all
bundles into one, yeah.
Is obviously a couple of beers after, you know, and had one or two before the game, but a couple afterwards to celebrate the win. You definitely left it a little bit hazier than you probably would have liked, but just fantastic. And then the biggest takeaway from the weekend, probably for most Devils fans there, was singing "Don't Take Me Home" after the game until every Giant had left the ice after doing every man's shirt off his back. Was special as well.
I think that is a moment for Devils fans to cherish for a very, very long time, if not for the rest of their lives, because the comeback, the game itself, and then to just be part of something like that collectively as a fan base was something really special.
And just mentioning the fans, having 300 fans in Belfast for a weekend is absolutely unreal. You know, there's always a really good number for the doubleheader, but the amount of fans, the amount of noise that was made throughout the game was brilliant, and it was, you know, just made the weekend all that better that there were just so many fellow Devils fans there with you.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, yeah, Friday was good. So we thought, and I think most people would have been happy with a split weekend beforehand.
So we thought.
But we did say going in, I think the three of us all a little chat, that whereas we'd felt quite a bit of stress before the Friday game, it was a much more relaxed Saturday, not worrying too much, thinking whatever happens, we've done what we need to do for the weekend. And the game against on Saturday night started really well. Jim Doucette-Guess on the ice, replacing the injured Bentivoglio from what wasn't even seen on the thing, but on the highlights, I think quite a cynical play by Walser to just hang his arm out into his head. But Doucette comes on the ice and 4 minutes in, having been sat the night before, proves that he wants to be back and back with a bang with a goal. And that first period, the Devils were so dominant. And if the Giants deserved to be 2-0 up on Friday night, Sean, Devils deserved at least that, but went in at 1-0 at the end of the first.
Yeah, and we actually shot them 12-3 as well.
Crazy difference there, but it really did feel that dominant. Thinking back, just cannot remember Belfast doing anything of note in the first period. And we were by far the better team, and second period started in a similar vein with the Devils on a power play. And we haven't mentioned him yet, and this is the first time I'm going to mention him, only because it relates to a goal. But on an awful call on Mike Quinnell with 14 seconds left in the first, rolls over into the second period, and Patrick Astling gets our first and only power play goal of the weekend. And you think at 2-0, we were cruising. But Belfast took a bit of heart from our night before. And two goals in about a minute and a half, Sean, left us quite worried at the end of the second.
Yeah, and they they'd scored a penalty shot as well, which is always a, it's always a good bit of confidence to score a penalty shot, lifts the building a lot, and because there's all that, that pressure involved, and then the relief of it is not quite like scoring a regular goal if for some sort of strange reason.
You have that build-up beforehand.
Yeah, because of the build-up beforehand and then the pressure that's on it, I feel like the elation when it does go in is, it's not as immediate as the goal, because like you said, you have that build-up, and it came at a perfect time for them. But I feel like it's a good thing that we went into the break with the tie, because I think if we'd gone on there with the one goal lead, playing the way that we had, or being as flat as we were in that later stage of the second period, then we would have come out and tried to sort of conserve that, and it sort of conserve that lead in the third.
Yeah, it's a good point. Fair point. And we definitely didn't do that with Andrew Hotham getting our third goal less than 2 minutes into the third, you know, starting another period quickly. Just looking at the game sheet, I can't see, it's not listed as a power play, but Blair Riley was sitting at 2 minutes for high sticking, so it was a power play goal. Obviously, Matt Myers was in the bin for a 10-minute abusive official. Another ridiculous Hogarth call, but we'll get onto it in a bit more depth once we finish the game. But yeah, it was definitely a second power play goal. I'm not sure why that's not been recorded properly, but Hotham gets that. And then a solid rear guard action from the Devils sees the game out with a penalty kill. It should have been another penalty kill. Chris Jones takes a 2+10 for checking from behind, and somehow Jeff Mason takes 2 minutes for diving as well, which, all right, maybe he made a bit of a meal of it, but if a guy's getting 2+10, you probably haven't dived.
Yeah. If it warrants a 2+10, it's a bad enough hit to go down exactly the way you do.
And Doucette took a penalty less than a minute later, and you think that could have been a 5-on-3 if the other one was there, and it was just all these things. But Devils managed to hold out for the 3-2 win. And you're
and then the penalties start coming.
No, I think the penalties started coming about 3 hours after the end of the game, didn't they? I wasn't facing the ice. I was losing my mind, and I think most of what had happened had already happened. Aaron, did you see everything kicking off, you know, from an early-ish point?
Well, I was making my way across towards, like, everyone else, and next thing I know, I see Belfast players leaving the bench, a few Dallas players leaving the bench, and Bounds wrestling with Dixon, or whatever his name is. I was like, what's going on? And then later on, as we was walking out, some Belfast fan posted a video, and I couldn't see what started there, but there was Hotham involved, there was Blair Riley, Jim Vandermeer, and it just all kicked off. It was bizarre. I wouldn't say it was a bench clearance of sorts, because, you know, it was just a lot of holding and hugging and kissing, but it was just bizarre. Like, my first ever bench clearance, and I didn't understand what happened.
If it's your first one, don't count it. Your cherry's still intact. Because that definitely. I think the only person who called it a bench clearance was Stephen Hogarth. Even Dobbs overturned all of his penalties, and the penalties kept appearing through the night, and sort of found out a bit later that if there's a bench clearance, you have to give 4+10 to the guy that leaves the bench, and then each team has to have 10 minutes and the bench coach has to have a match penalty. So I'm imagining it took that long for Hogarth to find that page of the rule book and had all the penalties on, because it wasn't a bench clearance, and, you know, Dobbs agreed, which doesn't look great on Hogarth, but we've probably just about finished the game, but
who cares? Because he was awful all weekend, and if his performance isn't assessed by the referee supervisor, then the league is doing something serious wrong, because he was diabolical and an absolute shambles for the entire weekend. And he made what should have been one of the best weekends in league history just a great weekend.
Yeah, because there's so much talk.
And that was because we won both of them.
Yeah, and I feel like Belfast were harder done by, especially on the Saturday game, than we were. But the call both ways were atrocious. But I think you've got to look even more. Hogarth is still a young ref. There are a lot of incidents in games he's refereeing. Why is he playing what is potentially, why is he given one of what is potentially a season defining weekend, especially for Belfast? Who makes the decision to give him that game? It's just, is it Simon Kirkham that allocates referees, Sean? Do you know?
I believe it is, yeah.
So as well as the inconsistencies with Dobbs, maybe there was no one else available to fly, but before, I think last week on the podcast, we said that it's a bit of concern that it's Hogarth. We definitely said it on the way over. And like you said, just really spoiled what, for a Devils fan, was a great week of hockey. And for Giants, you know, they're going to look at it that he's cost them, you know, a really good shot of the league. Whether you believe that, whether that's the case or not, I think, you know, Devils played really well, but just shambolic refereeing from start to finish for pretty much 120 minutes. That's my Stephen Hogarth rant finished on. A little bit
your wee rant.
Yes. Sean's picked up the lingo. Shall we do a player of the week?
Do we need to?
Well, I feel like we're all about to say the same name, but Sean, say the name.
Patrick Aslin.
Aaron? It's far too early. We are far too early. I've just peaked too soon. We have another game to discuss, gentlemen. Spoilers, it is Patrick Aslin.
Yeah, let's wait. Let's wait before that, before we jump the gun.
Yeah, we let's not talk about Tuesday. Nobody wants Tuesday.
Yeah, as you heard from Aaron's right then.
Yes, a game that against all better judgment, Sean and myself went up to after work with work the following day. I don't think either of us would have been a pretty sight on Wednesday. But we went up and Doucette guesses second in two, puts us in the lead after just under 6 minutes. And I've got to say, Sean, for the first, apart from there was one pass out of the defence that almost led to a goal, but for the first 9 minutes, I thought we looked comfortable and just were starting to think, oh, this could be a really nice way to finish the week off, but didn't end up that way in the end.
No, and like you said, I think we were very, very good for eight and a half, 9 minutes of the game. And then we're still in control of it. We make a bad pass out of behind the net and, we turn the puck over and Nicky Forrest gets one to tie the game. And we sort of think, well, you know, we made a mistake, but we still played well. Let's keep it going. And it didn't happen. Matt Carter added one as well on 12 minutes and 8 seconds. And the Panthers go into the first period break with a one goal lead. And if we hadn't played as well as we had in the first 10 minutes, I think before it started, you would have taken a one-goal deficit at the end of the first.
Yeah. Your Devils were coming off. Obviously, Nottingham also played two games playing later, but came off like an emotionally draining weekend, you've got to think. Mm. It's never an easy place to go, the NIC. But towards the end of that first period, we started to look a little bit slower. We didn't have the jump. We were second to most pucks. We just started to think, are we done? Did that one goal sort of, whatever we were running on, the fumes we were running on, reminded us that they weren't there, and definitely looked the way then for the opening 11 and a half minutes of the second, because Panthers came out and played some really strong forechecking hockey. Didn't let, I think felt like every other pass out of our own zone was being at least tipped, if not intercepted. Put us under pressure, and Brian McGrattan 5 minutes in, standing right in front of bounds, totally unchallenged, gets a little tip on a Stephen Schultz bullet, which was potentially going in anyway. Two and a bit minutes later, Nicky Forrick gets his second of the night. And
that is the end of Ben Bounds.
And that fourth goal was the end of Ben Bounds, yeah. And I don't know whether it was because of the way we were defending or because Lord Flack was at fault, but felt that for at least three of the goals, he'd been hung out to dry. There was, you know, the two in the first were from poor defensive plays, and the McGrattan one, if you leave a guy the size of McGrattan standing right in front of your goalie without any challenge, that's not making your goalie's life very easy, is it?
Just the stats on it. Ben Bounds actually had faced 9 shots and only made 5 saves.
It's a poor return, but it's the quality of shots he faced, you know. It's a shot off a tip from a guy right in front of you, and there was at least 2 shots from just outside the crease with no defenseman putting pressure on. So, you know, it's all well and good. You know, it's the type of shot, isn't it? And
yeah,
for whatever reason, made the decision to pull him. And we did tighten up. I think we stopped playing the stretch passing for one reason or another. But on a power play opportunity after a really sloppy too many men penalty, Aslin was going off the ice. Guy already came on and saw the puck and he turned around to go and play it. It's, you know, no option for the officials, too many men. And we started saying that David Clark was going to score from the back door, but he was on the ice when Chris Lawrence got the fifth to make it 5-1, and you know, that was all she wrote. Devils came back into the game last few minutes of the second with Patrick Asselin, you know, who's got to be a really strong contender for Player of the Week, I feel. Getting one back, and we've going to the second 5-2 down, and not full of confidence, Sean, but the third period, the Devils played
relentless a lot of attack. Relentless possession. Straight north, south. We played a straight. We played north. We went deep to the. We went hard to the net. We played pucks deep. Put everything on there we could, and you sort of felt like it was too little, too late. But then we'd overturned 3 goals in Belfast, and you know, we'd scored 4 goals in the last period against Belfast, and could we do it again? And that was maybe the glimmer of hope that you had.
Yeah, and you know, it's in a game where we lost by 3. You know, luck. You make your own luck, as everyone always says, but there were a lot of pucks in and around the crease that landed between a player's skates off a rebound, off a, you know, misdirected pass, or, you know, a miscontrolled puck. There were a lot of chances there, and I genuinely feel that we created enough to have scored the goals that we needed to get back in the game, but...
Yeah, I thought Mika Wiekman had a very good night.
Wiekman did play well. You know, 38 shots... he faced in total. And we didn't get the goal, and Lord did what Lord has sort of become a little bit known for in games that are like this. Like with 5 minutes, 11 left, made the decision to pull Moody. And just think, it'll be debated, you know, you could say we had nothing to lose. Perhaps with 5 minutes left, we could have got a goal in the next minute or two and then pulled him. But, you know, whatever happened with the extra attacker, your Devils kept Nottingham pinned in. And Joey Haddad gets the goal. I can't remember if Nottingham had called their timeout before or after that goal, Sean.
I felt like it was after it.
Yeah, but yes, I think it was, because we had quite a lot of possession. So, you know, nice bit of play. Joey Haddad puts a puck that was, you know, just bouncing around the net. And you think, oh, got to have a bit of a chance here. I wonder if we'll leave Moody in net for a little bit. Centre ice face off, up the ice we go, and boom, Moody's gone again. And from there, there was a solid minute and a half where the only time the puck left the Panthers zone was when they iced it. It was in there that Corey Nielsen called the timeout to give his guys a bit of a breather, obviously, because you can't change off an icing. And to, yeah, I suppose what team knows how to play against a team empty net? For 5 minutes, what do you try and do? It's crazy. Teams probably see it for the last minute, and you can ice the puck and probably scrape by with the guys on the ice if you have to, but it just wasn't an option for them. But unfortunately, Stephen Schultz gets an empty netter after, I've totally lost the train of thought. Was that the one that I thought was an icing, or was that the last one, Sean?
I think that's the one that you thought was, I've completely lost track of it, to be quite honest with you.
That one of the two empty netters.
One of the two empty netters was scored that we were convinced was icing, yeah.
It was icing, and also the puck was caught in the air, and Joey Haddad, returning to his pirouette, gave a lovely demonstration to referee Tom Perrin, caught the puck, turned around with the puck in his hand, and then dropped it the other way and went off with the puck. And Haddad demonstrated that 3 times in a lovely pirouette in style. But never mind, the goal stood, and we were back to 6-3, another 3-goal deficit. So we pulled Tom Moody again, why not? Just a crazy, crazy game. Andrew Lord then gets the goal 30 seconds later to put it back to a 2-goal deficit with 2.5 minutes left, and we win the face-off. I've got to be honest, in those last 5 minutes of the game, I cannot remember us losing a face-off.
No, I don't think we did.
And the way we pressured to keep the puck in the zone was excellent, but unfortunately we pulled Moody, and just 18 seconds after Andrew Lord's goal, Robert Farmer fires an empty netter to kill the tie at 7-4. We started the last 5 minutes of the game 3 goals behind. We finished it 3 goals behind. But for the 80-plus Devils fans that travelled up on Tuesday, it was more than worth it just for the enjoyment and the sheer what the hell is going on, Sean.
Yeah, well, I think it showed that, you know, we weren't just going to lie down and accept that we defeated. And it looked like we were going to... And I got to say, after an emotional draining weekend, like we just said, in Belfast, and 2 tough games against arguably the best team in the league, apart from, you know, They're in the run of the title. And after that, for us to just relentlessly just keep trying and trying and trying and pulling the goalie and just trying to outwork Nottingham to try and get back in the game, I think that sent a really, really good message to the fans that were there that this is a team that isn't going to lie down and just take defeat easily. They're going to go out there and play till the last whistle. And you can't ask for anything more. I didn't think it was our best performance. It wasn't the performance that we wanted or the result we wanted, but we came out there and gave it everything, and I don't think you can really ask much more.
No, we can't. Like I said, it wasn't the greatest performance. It was by no means our worst performance of the season. We've played a lot worse than one this year, probably against teams at least as good as or better than Nottingham. So there we go. But we still took 4 points from the weekend. I think everyone... from the week, from that little period of games, I think everyone probably would have, not everyone, but I think most people would have been happy with 4 points. And the fact those 4 points came whilst preventing Belfast from taking a point, for me, I'm happy. Could have got a bit of a lift from the end of the third. Yeah, hopefully the Devils didn't leave the ice quite as deflated as they would have if they'd have just limped home 5-2 losers. So yeah, that's all good.
And at least we know that if we need an empty net, if we need to score an extra tackle or goal, we're well practiced.
We are well practiced. I'm just looking at, a good sort of 3.5-4 minutes practice of empty net play. And perhaps if when Nottingham are playing Sheffield or Belfast, they're defending an empty net goal, we've helped them out as well. Right. Oh, drum roll, bit of tension, everyone. Who's it going to be for player of the week? Let's go to Aaron first, because I feel like that's the only excitement we've got.
I'll just give a name, and then Sean can give us his run-through of why, because I'm sure that he picked the same guy as me. But yeah, it's Patrick Aslan for me.
I love the fact that Sean has already picked earlier on the show, and Aaron has already forgotten and is assuming. Sean, why is it Patrick Aslan? Because it is unanimously Patrick Aslan.
Well, in shock horror, actually... Yeah, I'm going to go with Patrick Aslan.
Change my vote.
Well, what did the guy not do this weekend? He threw his body around in Belfast when we were losing, and he was unbelievable in Belfast. In that Friday game, the play for the Richardson goal was excellent. The assist on Joey Adair's goal, he scored a goal himself. He single-handedly pulled us up in that game and made things happen, and that's what you want from him. He hasn't maybe been on the richest reign of scoring form, but he's still been... playing pretty solid and working hard, but maybe the points haven't quite come as easily as they did at the start of the year. But I thought he was excellent in Belfast, and the points came to him this weekend, and again in Nottingham I thought he was excellent again. I thought he was probably our best player in Nottingham. So yeah, there goes to Patrick Aslan for me.
Yeah, 7 points over 3 games for Aslan. So definitely good performance. Like you said, easily. Not easily, to be fair, not easily. I think that's unfair on everyone else, but by a margin, he was our best player. But that's just because of how good he was. That's what Aslan can do. And like you said, sort of carried us. And we came close to coming. If we'd have come back in the Nottingham game, a lot of that would have rested on Aslan's shoulders and the way that he played. One other guy one guy that we can talk about that we've never spoken about is Denny Kearney, the new signing. Who played all 3 games following his arrival. Aaron, quite a quiet debut on Friday for him, though.
Yeah, he did impress me a little bit. We've seen a little bit of what he can do on Friday. He seems to have good hands, great vision, good movement, great skater. But I think we've seen a little bit more of him on Saturday. You know, he got in and around the net, created some fantastic chances that... unfortunately, we just couldn't score on. But, you know, I'm happy with the guy. He may not get a point in his first couple of games, but I'm sure as soon as he slots in and gets used to our systems, he's going to be one hell of a player because he's got that grit and determination. So I think he'll fit right in, and hopefully he can help us lift that thing that we all want towards.
Shush now.
Let's not set us all off again. There's quite a lot of tension in the pre-recording meeting, if you like, whilst discussing the thing that Aaron was alluding to. Sean, I sort of thought Kearney Friday potentially worried about making a mistake on his debut. Didn't really look to do anything special. Didn't do anything wrong. Just played a lot of sensible passes, positionally sound. But grew in confidence going into Saturday in Belfast and started to see him pulling some moves, trying a few more difficult passes. And he carried that on into Tuesday as well. And definitely looks a good pickup for the time of the season.
Yeah, I really like him. Like you said, I think he was a bit quiet on Friday. But I think that comes quite regularly to guys who play in their first game. The Nottingham fans seem to think that... I think it's Sarkanis who they just signed, did a bit of a quiet debut as well. But he showed glimpses of what he could do, and I think Kearney did that on Friday. And I thought he was really good on Saturday. And I got to be honest with you, you picked up that I said Aston was clearly our best player on Tuesday. I think Kearney ran him quite close, to be quite honest with you. I thought he was awesome. He's a proper Cardiff Devil. He plays hard. He's a good skater. He's not afraid to get in people's faces and be gritty, go to the net, chip in at loose pucks and wind a few people up occasionally. He sort of got under the skin of Ryan Martinelli on Saturday as well, and that's what you want. And he's got very, very good hands, I think, and it's going to suit him playing in this league because he's got that body to play physical, but he's a good enough skater to play on the Olympic ice, as he's proven playing in Bolzano. So... I really like him. I think he's a great signing for us. I think he's a perfect Cardiff Devil in my eyes. And from early glimpses, obviously you can't quite make that judgment in three games. But based on what I've seen so far, if he continues it, I'd love to see him back next year.
Yes, yeah. I think it's a very early sort of call. But as you said, he's shown, especially in the last two games, shown more than enough that if he does carry it on, that's... almost a cert, I'd imagine, that we'd be looking to keep him. And obviously, Andrew Lord's a fan anyway, given that it's 2 years in the, a guy we contacted 2 years ago. It's always good to see, players that we've wanted that we get, because that it's not, we haven't just picked him up on the cheap because he's the only guy available. This is someone that we've been looking at for a while. So, yeah, it seems like a good fit, as you say, and gives us the added benefit of being able to, go back to rotating the players, and something that, I think for 2 years, there's been a certain level of criticism about the way that we've managed our squad in the title running. First year, we discussed before, Jesse Mitchin sat for the majority. And then last year, it was pretty much Chris Culligan or Trevor Hendricks that sat out. This weekend alone, across the three games, we had Doucette sit in Friday, Chris Culligan on Saturday, which I think Lord said in his interview, he picked up a bit of a knock. And then Mark Lewis on Tuesday, compounded with the fact that Sean Bentivoglia was out, but doesn't count because he's an EU passport holder. So the two, taking out Culligan as he had a knock, that's two high-end players that Andrew Lord chose to rest. A ballsy move, do you think, or do you think this is the way that he'll play going forward now, and everyone or the majority of players will see themselves sitting from time to time?
It's quite a difficult one. You know, Mark Lewis sat on Tuesday. In my opinion, he's one of our top-end defencemen, and maybe some of the defensive errors that were made could have been rectified if he was on the ice. But to say where you're going to sit, it's always going to be a tough one. Do you rest people who've played had a lot of ice time? Do you rest people who aren't performing? You know, it's all kind of like a swings and roundabout thing. I think with the way the team is going, players that should sit are probably the ones, in my opinion, that aren't really firing on all four cylinders. You know, I know Deuce has scored two in his last two games, but and that's a reason not to sit him. But then, you know, it's such a tough decision when you're carrying that extra import. And, you know, we could, like, look at Tuesday. We sat Mark Lewis, one of our best players. If he played, it could have been a different game. We could have sat Andrew Hotham or Scott Hotham. Same thing could have happened, you know. And it's always going to be, if we win, it works. If we lose, it obviously didn't work. So it's always going to be a tough one. And I think if I was going to sit anyone, I would have looked at one of our guys who's playing top minutes that maybe needs a rest. But, you know, it's all, like, maybe sit Fournier, you know. You've got Culligan, who can sit back on defence and cover Fournier, and it can do a similar role in the way Fournier moves forward. And then you've given Fournier the rest off the power play and, you know, the extensive minutes he plays throughout the game. So, but, you know, I'm not a coach. I don't know what I'm on about, but that's just my opinion.
As Aaron said, Sean, it's a difficult decision. I think Tuesday's probably compounded by the fact that we were missing a forward with Bentivoglio out, maybe sort of not forced Lord's hand, but would have changed the way that you thought. But you know, do you see us carrying on the way we are? And you know, do you think it's right that we're sitting guys like Lewis, and you know, Doucette was a bit out of form, but you know, guys like Lewis who are probably playing some really good hockey at the moment?
Well, that's the way we should play it in my mind, because last year you mentioned that sort of rotational sit between Hendricks and Chris Culligan, and I thought that was wrong, because as much as we talk about him being one of the weaker players in the league this year, Hendricks was, you know, he was in spells, he was solid for us. He worked hard, and I think that we had players in that lineup who maybe weren't match fit, who should have been sitting in his place. And I think that is the correct way to go. I think maybe sitting Lord a few more times so he gets that time on the bench would be a good shout, but I think it should be spread more evenly, to be quite honest with you. Yeah.
Excellent. I do agree with Aaron in that I think if we see guys drop in form, then I'd be looking at that first. I think, you know, yeah. Doucette sitting Friday. You can't say he's come back and scored 2-2 because he sat, but you know, that is what's happened. So, you know, I think that's always the first place to look. But, and I think you're probably with the exception of Joey Martin, you could probably see anyone sitting between now and the end of the year. I can't imagine Joey Martin ever not playing if he's fully fit. But even you know, if he was carrying a knock for a single game, I'd rather rest him and go without him.
Yeah, well, you look at Joey Martin. Joey Martin should have been one of those players who sat last year when he was playing on one foot, and he didn't. And although he played his absolute nuts off for us and was probably our best player down the stretch, we probably could have used him more in one of the games that we lost just by rotating that body and having Chris Culligan on the ice when he was sat, that sort of thing. So, you know... Hindsight is a wonderful thing, but if Joey Martin is injured and risks being injured for the rest of the year, I would rather sit him than play a form team. I would rather play an out of form Guillaume Doucette than play an in form one footed Joey Martin.
100%. I think I was sort of referring more. I would be surprised to see him as a healthy scratch if he had no knocks or anything. But
No, I agree with you on that. But then, like you said, the only reason to play him, I was just referring to last year. We actually did that, and it probably cost us.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and you know, definitely considering, you know, as you said, we've got a lot of depth this year. I think we could take anyone out of that lineup if we're playing a full complement of imports, and we have still got a really one of the strongest teams in the league. Even if you're losing an Andrew Hotham or a Joey Martin.
Yeah.
Well, we took Andrew Hotham out of the team in Belfast and couldn't replace him, and that didn't go too badly in the Challenge Cup semi-final. So talking of the running, we are close enough to the running. The top three are down to just having 9 games left. We're in single digits, and we're obviously top of the league, and we're in the position now where we know the points we need from those 9 games. If the Devils take 13 points from any of the games, the Devils are the champions. Something Aaron said, that this is probably a bigger gap that's been at the top of the table for quite a while, but really interesting running that we play Sheffield and Belfast twice each. That's a lot of points to be dropped, Sean. It's going to be tense.
Yeah, it is. But you mentioned that number of points potentially dropped, that we need I think you said it was 13, but
yeah,
that goes down every time that one of those teams does lose a game. So you have that to look at and consider. And no one's winning out at this stage of the year. No one is winning out. I just don't see it. So I think it will be less than that, but then I also don't want it to come down to the last weekend of the season and need it to be less than that. So it's going to be tense. I had dread to think how tense we would all be if we had split the series, or if we had only taken a point, or, you know, we took 4 points and it's still, we're talking about how tense it was. And so, I don't like it.
No, but Aaron is definitely going to be interesting, and you have some massive game in Sheffield and potentially home to Belfast if it goes that long, and not going to be a nice weekend if we've got to play Belfast at home with the title riding on it. It could end up being nice, obviously, but not good for the pants.
No, I might not even wear. I'm just going to wear nappy.
You might not wear. I was going to say if you weren't going to wear pants, we'd all have to take gas masks.
Yeah. No, but it's going to be. You know, it's last 3 years. It's been exciting. We've been in the running. At this point this season, you know, we've got the benefit. We are the one that the other teams are chasing. So it's essentially ours to mess up. And whether we win here in Sheffield, Belfast. At home, or when, even if it's before then, you know, as long as we get, you know, I'm not going to say it, but as long as it happens and we do it, I don't care how, when, or how ridiculous I look after I do something ridiculous after winning, doing something, you know, but it's just.
This the league table is one of those where if you're a Steeler or a Giants fan, you're looking at it saying, we're out of it.
You know, yeah.
It's the Devils.
If you're a Devils fan and you've watched the last two title runners, you know never to say that.
Yeah.
And it's just the difference. We're looking at it as, oh, God, where could it go wrong? But
where are Cardiff going to mess it up, and where can we make the ground up? Although it is interesting that those two sides do play each other once more.
Yeah.
And Belfast play Nottingham three times. And I believe Sheffield play twice. Nottingham once. Twice? Is it twice?
They've got them on the last weekend of the season, I believe.
Ah, okay. So, yeah. So there's... I think with the overall run-in, I think that it's fairly even if you look at it like that. So, who knows?
Yeah,
who knows?
With this all playing each other.
We can talk this to death, and there's so many possible.
There's not a lot else.
Combinations. There's so many possible combinations to talk through about what could happen if so and so beats who, and if we drop a point X to X, Y, and Z. But
I think the only thing, regardless of permutations, we can comfortably say until Sunday night, we are almost as big a fans of the Fife Flyers and Nottingham Panthers as we are the Cardiff Devils, given that Fife and Nottingham both play Sheffield and Belfast this weekend. Yeah, so I've always liked it.
Justice for Fox. I'll pay for the appeal.
Obviously, there's Sean referring to Justin Fox being out for five games after a high stick that almost crossed Craig Sescon's eye in a match against Dundee. So difficult one for Fife, but you know, hopefully they can pull it out of the bag in one of the games. But the Devils, it's down to us. It doesn't really matter what Sheffield and Belfast do if we take care of our business. And our first order of business is Coventry at home on Sunday. They've managed to beat us twice in overtime at home this season, which is always sticks in the throat losing to Coventry at any time. But it's going to be a really difficult game at the moment. Aaron, Coventry are in eighth, hardly any points separating Manchester, them and Dundee. And Coventry, having played more games, really can't afford to be dropping points.
It's a game where Coventry, as you said, looking to gain some points in the playoff race, and it's a game where we're going to look to points to win the league. So it's going to go, it could go either way. They owe us one. You know, we've beat them God knows how many times over the last 3 years, and they're looking to get their own back. And a couple of games ago, they absolutely smashed Nottingham and we just lost to them. So they're going to think about that, and it's going to go either way. If we can take the two, and that would be brilliant, and I'd be happy.
Jordan, I think you've got a bad feeling about this game, or just a worrying nag. Where would you put the level of your feeling?
I'd say it's a worrying nag, and I just have a real bad feeling. Like Aaron said, Coventry probably owe us one. Coventry have the habit of just killing us when we're just at the worst possible time. Last year, they won the last ever game at the BBT where everyone was pumped. They completely took a win right of our sails, and that 2 points ultimately was massive in the run-in for the title race. And they have the chance to cause another scalp year, and they have something to gain from it because they are really, really struggling to make it into that playoff space. And they've got some good quality in there. If their netminder plays his best, he's very hard to beat. We just need to not be scared. We go to Coventry and we're never scared of beating Brian Stewart. We won every game there this year. And when they come to Cardiff, we don't seem to play them as we want. And we just seem to crumble, and Coventry catch us on the break, score some good goals, and we panic. And I say we turned a corner since we lost those last two games in overtime to Coventry, and we're a better team and in far better, more of a better place to win the game. And another sellout crowd, though. These sellout crowds are always a worry for me in any case, no matter what we do.
Surely we've had enough of them recently that a sellout crowd shouldn't be a worry now.
Scares me.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty that scares me about it. I'm not too worried about the size of the crowd. Just a bit of a tense one. And after what is, regardless of how it goes, I think it's going to be a difficult night Saturday. Devils have got the long trek up to Edinburgh then on Sunday. For another game, Edinburgh, they played Coventry Tuesday, Sheffield Wednesday, lost in both, which I think has probably, not mathematically, but has probably all but killed their chance of making the top eight. But yeah, they're not going to be out of it. They're on their home ice as well. Another tough game, but sort of one that, you know, we're playing 8th and 10th in the league. If you want to win the league, they're games that you've got to be looking to take points.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, if you're a Sheffield fan, Belfast fan or Cardiff fan, that's got to be the way you're looking at those games. But it's not easy on, you know, second game of the week after a long trip up to Edinburgh. It's going to be a difficult one. Obviously, got a webcast for this one, so plenty of fans watching at home, and obviously only a few making the trip up. I will say I am quite, I don't think I'm as nervous as Sean for the weekend, but I think if we drop points this weekend, I think it could lead to a bit of doubt creeping into the fans, but possibly into the team. You mentioned how that loss against Coventry in the tent really took the wind out of our sails last year. Is there a risk that a weekend that on paper, looking at the standings, should not comfortable, but you know, should be 4 points if we don't take them? Is there a risk of that happening again?
Of course it is. We can't underestimate Coventry because they've got a lot to play for, and anybody can beat anybody in this league. It's a cliche, but it is genuinely so true. You would never have thought that Fife would come back and beat Belfast 9-5 last Sunday. You just never know. And you don't know which Coventry team is going to come to play, because if a decent Coventry team comes to play and we don't bring our A game, then they're going to punish us. And if we bring our A game and Coventry bring our A game, we're going to win. I think that's, in terms of quality, we're a better side than Coventry. But if we come out there and underestimate them, then we're going to be in for a real tough night.
Yes, yeah, 100%. I do think we haven't mentioned Ramite. We have mentioned that the levels of Irish Guinness and cider that were consumed during the weekend, and I think we can put the lack of us tweeting about it squarely on the shoulders of that. So please do send us your Ramites this weekend. I'm quite confident in saying that unless we're sulking, we should remember to tweet, but you know, yeah. Who knows?
But if you want, I'll give you a Ramite right now. My love was the Guinness, and my hate is that it doesn't taste the same when you come home.
Oh, bless. Bless. Well, mine, I didn't realise we were doing Ramites. Mine was obviously the third period on Friday, but mine would have been Stephen Hogarth. I don't want to go in. Just that. It would have been Stephen Hogarth. Aaron, have you got a Ramite quick beat around the show, Aaron?
My love is my lucky pink glove that we won two games in. No one knows why I'm on a Saturday, but I'll wear it Saturday if anyone wants to see. And my hate is the fact that I wore brand new trainers to Belfast and they come back black.
I also stupidly wore new trainers. Mine were worth a lot less than yours, Aaron, but they are also black. I haven't faced washing them yet. If you're planning on going to Belfast and drinking in Rockies, which you should if you're in Belfast, just wear some old trainers. The floor oozes black. I'm not sure why. That's made the place sound horrific.
It's the best place in the world.
It's the best place on earth.
It's a good place. I wouldn't go quite that far.
The best place. It's one of the best places.
I'm going to be sleeping in, and that's fantastic. I like sleeping. That is the show, though. We've rounded it out with the Ramites, so make sure you send us yours for the coming weekend. Thank you all for listening. As always, send us any thoughts. We want your advice, but we want to know what you think about the team, about the show, what you want us to talk about, if there's any topics you want us to pick up. But from Sean, Aaron and myself, thank you again for listening, and that is your Red Army Roundup. Devil inside, ever single one of us.